So what's a good topic?
That was good.
This shit so fucking crazy.
In my mind, I have all these ideas, and then I totally forget about them. I'm going to bring this up.
Yeah, you invalidate them immediately, and you're like,
You'll have to text yourself.
I just don't remember them.
Yeah. Text yourself.
Like, I must have used your line about the watch salesman, because somebody that wanted to buy a watch was one of my people, because... It was like, oh, I'm trying to do that thing about the watch. I was like, oh, really? I said that.
Oh, really?
I stole that.
I got something for you.
Just in relation to, thoughts and...
some new thought that you can focus on?
Yeah, like some sort of rumination or that's trying to get your attention.
You
want to buy a watch?
Well,
at least that's how I'm
going to buy a watch. But no, what about
I don't think the younger crowd would get that reference. It's kind of an old reference.
They don't even know what a watch is.
That's true.
You'd have to change it to want to buy an iPhone or something. But who knows?
The watches, they're so out of
date.
Yeah.
Call it the cutting edge of your present experience. You're solicited nonstop, right, inexhaustibly, by the iPhone or the watch sales person. They have an infinite number of watches. And they're indefatigable? Indefatigable, right? Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, indefatigable, which means they never sleep nor tire of selling you a watch. So we are easily exhausted, right? We'll wait.
I'm like, what happened?
I wish we could join in. You will admit it.
When she can speak.
I was indefatigable until very recently. It's been like...
Welcome to Night Sky Song. Your vocabulary and girth will increase.
And your intelligence may not.
That will surely decline.
But you will
get
stupider.
No, you get much stupider. But you do laugh a lot.
Well, if you want to take a GRE or something, it could be useful. Vocabulary.
Anyway, you were making the point. My apologies for irresistible laughter.
You can feel yourself free from the impulse to dwell in or purchase or express any kind of thought or meme.
Don't buy the watch.
This is just brilliantly silent. Strangely, nourishingly, absolutely silent. And the watch salesman or woman is... Want to buy a watch. This one's nice. This one. And it's not possible for you to refuse each sales call. Because they're coming at you too furiously.
Would they actually be trying to trip you up?
Well, the metaphor of buying a watch is that you now inhabit, right, emptiness as something or someone, right? You conjure a sense of personality or of being of a durable nature through the movement of association.
And some would say that's all as much a part of it as anything else. The having the wool pulled over eyes is as much a part of this reality as the sort of stark, oh, holy shit-ness of this reality.
Well, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that it's a part or as much a part as anything else is great. You know, the key is not to value it as being special or other or anything. The key is simply to see that you are primarily and without effort absolutely imperturbable. Then one buys a watch. And the moment you buy a watch, right, time, space, and self become the primary distracting fields for your experience.
So should we say no thank you, or let's have a watch?
Yeah, this is... let's say you're sitting on a meditation cushion with minimal distraction, at least in terms of, you know, worldly distraction, right? You cut yourself off from the routine of your life, from your obligations and responsibilities, from your entertainments. You're on a 10-day or 1-month retreat, and you get to sit on that cushion to your heart's content as many hours in a day as you feel like hanging out there. And when you're not sitting on the cushion, then you agree to walk slowly and quietly, all right, around the grounds and through the woods, so that all your only obligation is to enjoy yourself. And you'll discover, one typically discovers, that what we become besieged by restlessness, by thinking, by security seeking, by justifications, by a million things that, let's say, interfere with or throw you out of the invitation to luxuriate in yourself without affliction. So these retreats are not necessarily a walk in the park where you actually enjoy a break from the routine of your neurotic life. They tend to become like kind of super neurotic in a different manner, because now you don't have all of the distractions and the to-dos and the responsibilities and the, right, the rumination that goes on. So you think you're going to be set free, but you find out that your consciousness is so unruly, so restless, so unable to enjoy the profound simplicity of yourself. So it becomes a madhouse. And it's not easy, right, to sit through it. And I'm not even talking about that crazy style of Guenka sitting, where the encouragement is that you cathart by being still and not move for such long periods of time. Yeah, that you're gonna be forced yourself into if you can handle it, into an unnatural, you know, cathartic. Right, psychosomatic, cathartic, so-called purification through that kind of practice. There's a certain violence in that practice. But still, that practice is renowned in certain Asian cultures.
So it's really no different. It's no different in a peaceful meditation retreat or day-to-day life. It's one by watch, and you buy. It's constant.
And underneath it, or alongside it, because you can't really place these in some kind of geometry, right? Psychic geometry. It's too weird. But while this agitation, synaptic or pranic agitation, is going on, you're also remarkably silent. Profoundly unencumbered and unafflicted and unafflictable.
It's always there. you just don't notice it.
The pranic hysteria, the pranic stimulus, is, you could say, occurring on or in a cauldron of absolute silence. Typically, we associate with the restlessness and the takeaways or the consequences, the temporality, the imaginary temporality of self that is reinforced through restlessness, through purchasing the watch. We long for...
But it's impossible not to purchase a watch. We're always going to be purchasing watches. I mean, even as I sit here, myriads of impulsive things I want to say or, you know, go on in my head, and then finally it gives rise to words. I feel like that's buying a watch.
Okay. Sure. So?
So unless I remain mute.
Well... Can you find a resting place, an asan, a texture, in your present experience that is not going to buy a watch?
Somewhere, yes.
And I'm not saying that means we have to commit to mauna.
Yeah.
Because that's already way too late, too downstream. Right now, can you find, even if you use your imagination, which is absolutely permitted, if not encouraged.
So how are we defining buying a watch? Like getting caught in the grips, or...
Creating a abstract universe.
But there's always going to be abstract universes.
There actually is never one. Mm. It feels like there's always one because we're habituated to watch sales. Whatever it may be that's occurring or appearing in, right, the sensitivity of your awareness factors is absolutely silent.
Well, but how are we defining abstract universe? I mean,
ideas. Individuation.
Problems.
Peoplehood.
See, I think there's a difference, though, between problems and abstract ideas. I mean, creating visual images, and that to me seems like an abstract idea, whereas, you know, being in the grips of the story about it seems like buying a watch.
Okay, sure. The invitation is to relax completely from universe construction.
Or relax completely with it, or free of it completely? I mean,
yes.
That's a good question.
Both.
Yeah. With it when you create it, free of it if that appears.
So it still seems like there's an abstract universe to me.
Okay. I'm not saying there isn't one.
So you said there wasn't.
Who's up first?
I'm not trying to be all, you know.
No, it's good.
Interrogating.
No, it's fine. Good.
On the witness stand.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Did you not just say that?
Yeah. Where were you? Where were you on Wednesday, Bugsy? I was at the movies. Yeah, I was at the movies. Yeah. Is anything occurring now that feels right to call an abstract universe.
My story in my mind is it wanders to what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Okay.
What happened today? That's the abstract universe.
That's right. Placing yourself as a sustainable creature or experiential packet is the construction of the universe, because now everything has become referential to you.
Yeah, that's not, that sucks. For me, in my experience, it's really, really relieving. Well, mine sucks. If there were me. To just hang out with this, like, really nakedly, as not about anything that has anything to do with me, or, like, my persona, or my clothes, or how I might look, or act, or what anyone thinks about me, it's, like, it's so much, it's just totally different.
Well, these flies are obviously a metaphor for the watch salesman. You can just ignore them. You can just, they don't, I mean, they honestly don't bother us.
But isn't there a universe every time you focus on something? I mean, isn't that the universe?
Okay. It has a dreamy nature, doesn't it? What it is that you imagine, or any of us imagine, we're inhabiting, how we're justifying it, how we're occupying the miracle of our own consciousness with stuff to do, plans, justifications, stories told, insults, right? Sorrows, gratitudes. The whole movement of measure, right? The whole movement of spontaneously arising internal referencing that creates the sense of you as a disparate creature in, call it, temporal or cosmic durability. Without it, where's the seeking? Where's the lack?
I mean, without an eye, without a sense of...
Whatever it is, it's hard to, yeah. It's hard to really nail it down. Because it's not real to begin with. Right?
I think the good metaphor is the story.
Fair enough.
When your universe creating, it's when you're adding to your own story.
Yeah.
If you're not doing that...
Yeah.
It's better.
So I heard Ajahn Chante say once, thought created the universe.
He said what?
Thought created the universe. Somebody said, what created the universe? He said thought.
Okay.
Yeah, where'd he get that from?
Well, you know, Krishnamurti was kind of high on that same metaphor.
So that means the universe is just created every time you have a thought. So that's the universe in that moment, and it comes and goes in any given moment, you know. Microsecond. Indefinable second.
It's like worse than an alert.
Hi, guys.
There you are. Hi. So,
oh, my God.
Oh, you never thought you'd see that again.
No, I really didn't.
When is it with your next to Francie?
I'm going to have this one right here.
Can I have some more of this? Decaf?
That'll happen so fast.
I am. Damn, man. What are you, like a ninja? Man, the ninja.
Oh, good.
Leap of lettuce.
I'll take a watch, though, if you're...
Yeah. I'd like to buy a watch.
I think Mary should show it
to her. Because
she's quick.
I'm
going to
warm up my coffee.
Okay. Even that, you know, nice reflection is not true.
Yeah. Which reflection? The Ajahn Chante one?
Yeah, that one? You know, that someone says, what creates the universe? Yeah. And the response, yeah. You know, a well-thought-out, non-dual reply is, okay. You know, thought does. Right?
Katie says you create a universe every time you open your eyes in the morning.
there was none until you wake up and open your eyes and come back home.
What about when you, well, what, because I guess you remember your dreams, but you're...
She doesn't talk about, like, dreaming like people.
Yeah,
I think like, your universe created all the time to dreaming.
You created a hell of a universe the other
morning. We don't have a fucking clue.
You really don't.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, we, all of these metaphors from...
I think a fart created the universe.
Farts,
well, that would be one, too, right?
And it was like, it smelled like roses, of course, but...
Yeah.
Like
these are
fart.
These are these are celebrated, renowned, very successful spiritual teachers, right, on the world stage. They don't know anything. Whatever metaphor they may choose, which is right, a response of generosity to an aspirant that asks a meaningful and sincere question about some quality of causality. You know, they don't put their finger to their lips and right wave their hand suggesting nothing could or should be said. They reply with a, you know, an appropriate yogic or Buddhist or non-dual Advaitic remark. But even those remarks are untrue. There's no universe. There's no creating of a universe. There's no thought. There's no sleep. There's no opening up your eyes. There's nothing. There's the appearance of constructing a sense of durability.
Well, I mean, that's true, though. I mean, how do you get to the point where what you're saying is so clear-cut?
Ah, well, here, you've already... arrived. It's not like you need to change anything. Really. And it's not that it's clear cut. It's too warbly for anything to be clear cut.
Like if there's some intuitive sense, okay. Somewhere, you know, that registers.
You're dripping with it.
But it's not irrefutable. I want it to be irrefutable.
Oh. Good plan. here's the issue. I mean, it's a wonderful instinct in the yogic path.
Yeah.
It's a wise instinct in the yogic path to approach and or arrive at some irrefutability. It's a dilemma. Because that quality of irrefutability drags you along as the knowing subject. That's the problem. As long as you wish to be, though the instinct is laudable.
Well, how can it be spoken with, like, how can you sit here and speak with that kind of confidence without it?
Everything's made up, like having the next bite of a bear claw. Why not? If in social conversation we can create exotic universes of total bullshit with total confidence, mm-hmm. Why not create anti-universes with the same confidence?
Universe.
Anti-universe.
Yeah. I mean, Who's the last authority on your experience? But you. I mean, no one can help you. No one can. And that's the good news.
It is, because it's really, you really, this is a first-hand experiment. That's like the most key, valid thing you've got.
Yeah.
But
so,
if it's undefinable, unquantifiable, unspeakable, then what the fuck?
That's why we call it what the fuck. Yeah. Good turn.
That's so cool.
That suchness appears to be present in the vicinity of Panera Bread. Is that sufficient irrefutability for you, or missing something? So you like any of us, want further confidence, want more irrefutability.
Well, some people seem to speak with great confidence.
They could be psychopaths, or they could be onto something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter, because it's really up to you.
God, and
there's such a vulnerability when you start to see through. Like, you start to see through who you thought was, like, I've been trying to pin this down. Okay, they don't. All right, they're it. They got the ear marks.
Bingo. Yeah.
And then it gets blown out of the water. Okay, well, maybe they're in it. And by the time you blow enough of them out of the water, you realize it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
And
right.
If you don't come back to personal experience, you're not ever holding on to anything.
Yes.
It is just personal experience.
Yeah.
It's not what you say, it's not what Katie says, it's not what anybody says.
No.
And it isn't even something you're going to bring to yourself. There's nothing to bring to yourself.
No.
So what do you do?
Nothing.
Apparently, I just keep going. That seems to be what happens. I just keep going.
Well, maybe there's an aptitude of experimentation. I don't know. In my experience, that showed up. That's a universal thing.
Well, to express these kinds of remarks about it means that you have to depersonalize so that now you can start reporting on it. And that buying a watch.
Well, that's the funny thing. I'm sorry. Well, the reporting on it. So anybody who's speaking is reporting. Therefore, it's a great mystery. And there's those are watches too.
It also depends on the quality of the communication. Whether you're asserting something about the nature of reality, like Adyashanti's remark or Byron Katie's remark about how a universe is created. That's an assertion, right? It's a lovely one. It has a yogic aptitude. It's not true, but it can be spoken with confidence, especially if you're making that kind of money. But we can also play around with presence and communication from a more teasing point of view, right? A more questioning point of view.
Feeling it. Questioning isn't buying a watch.
Yes, that's true. Wondering or questioning is not watch sales.
It's not watch sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
But questioning, assuming it's not this because it doesn't have enough pizzazz, or it's not that because of that, puts you in a box where you're never going to see anything other than what.
Questioning as a strategy only goes so far, but it's good practice. Right? I mean, all of the yogic arts, regardless of the culture, will introduce you to some foundational practices to begin to get accustomed to feeling your way into the plenum of experience without going insane, without, being overwhelmed by hysteria, by metaphor. But that's why so few people practice meditation.
Well, they hate it. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Yeah.
They love it. I think people love it. I mean, I know there are the people who like it.
The general population, if there was one,
yeah,
doesn't want to go anywhere near. Yes, the gift of meditation.
They'd rather run 10 miles in a marathon. And yet you can go to a
restaurant. Well, if it's guided, maybe.
Maybe it's guided.
My mom likes the guided angel meditation.
Although, when I started looking around for the service, I realized about halfway through there's not anywhere near that many people in the room. I was shocked. When I started actually looking around, it was like, holy shit, people don't take this half as seriously as I do. Most of them are like bailing and doing other shit.
Sure. Yeah.
Not most of them, but a lot.
Yep.
You're like, I watched her.
The confidence that we might seek starts here. Absolutely now.
He lost his diploma within 20 minutes.
But if we relate to the mystery of present experience from an acquisitive point of view, we drag the myth of self along for the ride in hopes of the
it's
myth
big,
of self.
It's a big catch 22. Is that the expression?
It's a big catch 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Would it be possible to discover a quality of confidence which is not acquisitive, not the result of anything?
Confidence for confidence.
Confidence meaning, like you said earlier, with the passion that you spoke it with. I want to be, right, confident about the irrefutable nature of reality. Right? You aren't fucking around. Yeah. And that's, I mean, without that interest, without that passion, we just become apologetic, right? We're not that serious, are we? You have to become that serious. You have to become that interested, that vital.
But isn't that a strong eye?
No.
The little eye wanting the big eye?
No. No. Not at all.
No.
No. No, that vitality is the urgency of this miracle itself, gifting itself with the revelation of the nature of itself.
And the craving almost becomes not to be, you know? It becomes a craving not to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Craving to be.
That's right. Well, I mean, the Buddha was wise on a few points. We'll give him a break. You know,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, whatever. You know, chalk up a few for the Buddha, where he reflected on that revelation, which is be careful about the desire to be and the desire not to be, right? Because he was pointing out that you can get into a bit of a crook if you're insisting on not being. Because again, we can't help but the reflex of dragging one's subjective nature along for the ride in hopes of having a different quality of experience a moment from now.
It's always negotiation. Always negotiation for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Negotiation for what I can avoid losing, what I think maybe I can gain. It's always negotiation, whether it's...
That's the watch salesman.
It's always...
Yeah, right?
God help me, I can't just take this on its terms.
Ah, thank you.
Not possible.
So there you go. So that's wonderfully illustrative of taking one's imaginary subjective nature on the road to have spiritual experience, let's say. Or to satisfy the craving for not being. It's very subtle, isn't it?
I guess even the experimenting is the same, because it's like, who's experimenting and with what and whatever. But it still seems to be helpful in some way for me if, like, something's bothering me along those terms, to be like, let's check it out in some way.
Yeah. Sure.
You get behind the truck that's, you know, one of those wide load trucks that's going too long. So you very craftily take this other road to avoid.
I did that today. Go on,
sorry. It's communicable.
And then you get behind somebody who's going 2 miles an hour. And then you end up at your destination, and you're a bit late, and you're nervous about it because there might be some tension there because the person's not really cool with lateness.
What is it that you're asking me to explain?
You find out that your appointment really wasn't until 4, which is an hour later.
Uh-huh. Yes. So, if this is radiant expression appearing in radiant consciousness, then that's enough. You don't bother to explain the curious particularities of circumstances and events that occur within the plenum of, you know, universal expression, because it's a holofractal mirage. What's there to explain?
Oh my God, she saw Andrew.
that one seeks an explanation is, well, you could say it's the yogic error of trying to be. And therefore looking for what? Supramental or supra sensual explanations for the bizarritude of being.
So it could have easily turned out to be, you know, smooth sailing. I got there an hour and 15 minutes early.
Here's something more startling than that, with your kind permission. Did anything that happened to you prior to this moment amount to anything?
We were actually just talking about that.
Well,
both
of my son
about it.
Conjured at present.
Yeah.
Right? A wave of association and sentimentality or motherly love occurs in your experience. You equate that with the birth of your son, and then that becomes a meaningful milestone, and understandably so, to associate with. But you can see you're referring to memory to create, yes, some kind of meaning that you can associate with.
A lot of my memories of good things are like horrors.
The only place you live is present. The only place you can live where this confidence may be discovered is present. Nothing that occurred prior to this moment in your so-called life amounts to anything. That's how remarkably free you actually are. You're not confined or confounded or confoundable. That's the confidence. But you see, it's not a confidence that results from, let's say, knowledge or acquisition or agreement of any kind.
I feel like that was Eric, though.
Oh, I can't believe what you said.
It's a peculiar kind of confidence because it relies on nothing. Literally, relies on nothing. Because all of permutation is an even playing field for every so-called primate that appears to be dwelling in it. What good is your knowledge? What good is it to say, oh, the universe is created by thought or created the moment you wake up in the morning? Not that those metaphors aren't lovely, but so what? They don't really have any lasting value. Curiously enough, neither do you. You have no lasting value. Your consciousness has no lasting value. What's appearing in it has no lasting value. That's the freedom. Which is the cessation of the myth of subjective experience. And it's here for the taking. Can you see that without the movement of thought, the association of thought, the rumination, the psychological time, which is synonymous with thought, without that, this is empty.
Without the recording, interpretation. Everything that comes from the guy that caught by watch, one by all that.
It's like you get to have it, but you can never speak of it.
Speak loudly. Find a soapbox. Shout it to the mountain.
No, I mean the quality of it.
No. Yes.
No?
You can. You can.
He had it. It's like you've been given a gift, and it's like, yeah, but it's.
That's
yeah,
a.
You're sitting with someone, like observing it, and then you're like, I can't get this. I have nothing. I say can.
Well, sometimes when you try to say it, it just.
Yeah.
And yet the gift, though it may be inexpressible from the vantage point of an accurate metaphor, the gift is perfectly expressible, liberatingly present. It's shouting itself, unabashed, right? Unabashed, completely self-revelatory. So from that vantage point, anything you say about it is fantastic.
What has meant a lot to me in the past when you describe like availability? That's the best gift you can give anyone.
That's what you got. Mercy, grace, availability, confidence. These are all, you know, working metaphors for the irrefutable nature of the present experience. Not as the consequence of anything. Not really as the culmination of anything that occurred to you prior to this moment. Here we are. This is liberated. You don't need really anything more than this. Why would you even wish to embellish this? The moment you try to put a Hawaiian lei around emptiness, you've got Hawaii. Right? Leave it alone.
That only felt relevant for me. I know this is speeding, is it there? Or right now, that only feels relevant for me if I'm a person. In the humanhood game, I tend to more, that's where I want to embellish. Because then it's like I'm a persona and I have things that I want to represent in a way I want to be and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. The person is another way of saying the universe.
The person is another way of saying the universe?
Yeah, you can't have one without the other. The moment you make something out of the miracle of your imaginary subjective nature, you have a universe.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right?
How about person... Personing.
Well, this is still
something.
A magical, abstract universe without being a person.
Personality.
I don't know what the hell universe means or is or.
We don't really
you know,
do
whatever.
We? When we refer to the universe,
it's not like the same as I'm a person living on a gigantic ball curved Earth, and I have things to do, represent, to be.
Yeah, it's all made up.
I don't know, it's Friday. I should probably be doing something better than this.
You're young.
I know. Forgot it was Friday.
Why am I sitting around with a bunch of old people untangling the strings on the nature of the universe?
Because because I don't have any idea that it's Friday or that I'm
really?
A person. And I have no friends.
Really? I don't know where else to go.
No, none of that applies at all.
You know, any tension field.
I was young and single, I'd be at the bar.
Any tension field that arises for you is imagined. That's how free.
Say it again.
You are.
Any what field?
Any tension field.
Tension field.
That arises in your experience. Arises because there is a spontaneity of association and a story told. So it's the miraculous genesis of temporality, which is identified with as self. The mirage of the durability of you, and therefore, right, a subjective, durable subjective nature that is at risk. Psychologically, emotionally, physically, in every imaginable, right, way, you're at risk.
If that's the case, you better start negotiating.
It comes with.
Charming people to get what you want.
It comes with, right? Yeah. The being at risk is accompanied by compensatory mechanisms of all kinds, conscious and unconscious. To navigate a grandiose hallucination.
Even the premise of the negotiation, even the premise of the desired manipulation assumes, what do you call it, cause and effect. Assumes a cause of the universe.
You're already symptomatic. Yeah, so that we can see the mechanism by which we negotiate, navigate, distort, resist, manipulate, justify, right, is all spontaneously appearing as adornments of the foundational, call it, or core belief, which is the misery of self. That one's subjective nature is disparate. When it's not. So the sense of being a creature, a being, right? Inhabiting the body as the consequence of conception. And having all of these incredible worries to try to get yourself right, put together, earn enough to retire, and all of the other miseries that accompany, right, the bookends of birth and death, right, the imaginary bookends of birth and death, and that you are somewhere between these two cardinal points. That's misery.
Yep.
Now, typically, we're not all that interested in giving up the entirety of the revelation of this misery. We just want to get rid of the parts that don't feel right.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we want to medicate away the parts that don't feel right, and we want to embellish the parts that do. Like our, who was that lovely blonde actress in Legally Blonde? That, what was the move?
Bend and Snap.
Bend and Snap!
What's it called?
Reese Witherspoon.
Bend and Snap. Right? She was teaching bend and snap to her hairdresser friend so that she could attract the attention of the UPS delivery guy.
How do you remember?
So she did bend and snap and broke his nose. So our whole life, as we navigate with what it is that we like and don't like, is just a bunch of bend and snap. We're putting on a show.
We're usually breaking our own nose.
Noses are broken along the way. That happens. You see how we're negotiating with unseen forces that we perhaps anthropomorphize satisfactorily or unsatisfactorily in hopes of outwitting God, getting under God's radar, being somehow blessed specially by God, having our will, agenda, and plans work out the way that we need them to. So if it appears that my agenda, and there's 1,000 of them in a day, if not in an hour, work out to my serotonin-based satisfaction, then I'm going to go to church because this is working for me. But if I end up in failure, well, I'm likely to become atheistic. Or I live somewhere between very convoluted and confused superstitions for my entire life, not really knowing if there's someone out there or not out there, what their gender might be, how I might supplicate them more successfully. Right? This is the schizophrenia of a life dedicated to compensatory mechanisms, to try to create security where there is none. So we impersonate.
Impersonate?
Yeah, we impersonate who or how we are presenting to the universe at large to try to get away with all of our hidden agendas for security seeking.
There's a lot of monkey see, monkey do going on, as far as I can tell. If there were other people... That's pretty rampant.
Yes, absolutely. We have to be somehow willing to move beyond the entire inventory of our compensatory behavior, our psychic compensatory behavior. And really be willing to stop supplicating.
But if you get large quantities of self-discipline to stop the compensatory behavior, it's the same thing.
That's right. You've just become...
You can't do it by, I'm going to get religion and I'm going to do it right now. That's just another negotiation.
What is his name?
Happens or it doesn't.
Joel Osteen, is that his name?
Yeah,
the gigantic church student.
How many Joel Osteens are there? There may be 2, 3, 10 million devotees around the world that are tithing in to Joel Osteen and his ministry.
I can't tell the difference between Clay Aiken and Joel Osteen.
Yeah. I think they've both been on that Donald Trump show.
The Apprentice?
Celebrity Apprentice.
Really? Joel Osteen? Oh,
just teasing.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Right.
She's like, really? I'm going to go watch it. Now, I have to go.
They can't go to Joel Osteen's church.
How come? Oh, he's gay. Oh, is he? So...
He's against gays.
He's gay? Clay?
Clay, I think so.
Yeah. He's gay. Yeah, and Joel's like not into it. He's like not having it.
I was like, wait a second, Rick.
He's a crime against it.
I think I remember seeing one of those and talking about this old gay thing. How he doesn't like, commend to that now.
Hey,
anyway.
How would there not be a universe outside of this one? Everybody seems to know, like, who these people are.
I know,
you
I know.
You start to compare notes, it's like, how is there not TV over the last year for people to know these people?
Yeah, you just don't have enough celebrity chops going on. You don't know nothing about nothing.
You live in the middle of nowhere without TV when Robin Williams died, and you're like, what? I didn't know.
Who is that?
Well, I know who he is.
I actually knew somebody who knew Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal apparently was a very good friend with... They were actually really good friends, not just...
what just happened?
I know, it's just stories, and I'm not trying to, like, you know.
I've heard Hugh Hefner can go a long time.
First-hand experience?
Did you tell
first-hand me? First-hand experience?
This is something that
is
you have
first-hand or
about.
Second-hand?
I think that came from that.
Well, I think he tried it out.
He's apparently a really good guy. That's all I'm
going to
say.
Billy or Robin?
Billy Joel? You have to be talking about.
Yeah, they both seem like good guys.
Who?
Robin
Billy.
Williams.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Robin.
Can you hook me up with you? Wait, is he dead?
No, he's still going.
Still a lot of money?
Just come up with a bunny ears and a little tail.
Yeah, sure.
Practice your snap.
Bend and snap.
Yeah. And you can teach me the snap, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
You sound like you got that
down. Yeah.
Bleach your hair blonde.
As long as it's okay with you, Ben. There won't be anything.
Bend and snap.
It's only so I can get to Hugh.
I think I definitely think of myself more as the woman who bends her hair against God.
I'd probably kill
Reese
him.
Witherspoon.
Mind is very playful. Associations and wonderments and celebrities speak and it's remarkably playful. What's there to give up? What's there to give up? If there's something to give up the myth of your present subjective nature.
How do you do that?
Good question.
Because I've been trying.
Uh huh.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I can kind of space out like she seems to be doing.
Yeah.
Who's she?
Well, space out, space
I'm
in.
What's that? I'm asking too.
It's really much more simple than we think. Here it is. Here's the answer. It's right here. Even if it's just for a moment, notice yourself completely empty of qualification.
If there were an experiment, and if it was possible to do anything, I feel like that would be it. That you could kind of, you know, if you can remind yourself, I don't know. I don't know how, you know, saying anything sounds ridiculous because it sounds like a doing, but...
You return to it in a manner of speaking, which is none other than that same confidence with which someone may appear to be speaking. Mm-hmm. Confidence and... feeling, your unafflicted nature are the same. And here it is.
Yeah, I like to, when I listen to the audio of Night Sky Sangha, I always feel like the Manchurian candidate. It's like, oh, it's like
being turned into an assassin.
That's a good book.
Did you read the book?
I turned into an assassin. Sorry, when I first started doing this, I was just thinking people were like, I'm like, people are gonna come get me. I'm doing something wrong. Like, I would check my door and be like, no one's coming to get me. Okay.
Drop all inventory of self. That will be editing.
Come on.
Sorry.
No,
ding dong. Homeland Security.
She's dead. And the black sheep are kind of hanging out in the parking lot watching. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, I would be like, I as a kite listening to Peter Brown and be like, this someone's going to come right now. And like the little men with the black, they're coming. Because this is like...
I should have said
like
Queen
my
of
mind
Hearts
was like set free and I felt like...
No problem.
It was like funny. I'm like, how come
we have editing tools.
Is not here? Like, trying to stop this.
So we can be fast and loose with our wit without... And it can disappear. Nobody knows nothing about nothing.
Nobody knows nothing about nothing. In Italian style.
Where were you, Bugsy?
Nobody knows nothing.
I was at the movies. Yeah, I was at the movies. I had nothing to do with that bullet. I was at the movies. You're a wise guy, Bugsy. Says who? Drop all inventory now, just and not even don't even do it. Just completely,
just do it.
Completely disengage from all inventory. Find that kernel of absolute freedom in your own consciousness, in your own experience. Give it a little bit of attention. That we are afflicted is imagination. That you could say we embellish with a tremendous amount of confidence. And it's made up. Why not try the other side of the coin? See that as in right now. You're not afflicted or afflictable. Imbue that with the same confidence.
Not being afflictable, that's pretty nice. Not that it's always the case, but...
It's like the Robert Palmer song. Simply unafflictable.
Can I be in the backup singer?
Yeah.
You got the moves.
Well, I don't know. It wouldn't be the same words.
If I tried.
What is the real song, though?
She's so weird.
There's this one.
Well, it's kind of the same.
I don't know. I'm trying to make some notes. Don't worry.
Your present experience is simply irresistible.
Can't we keep resisting it?
Well, that's the experiment. That's the working experiment.
I think that's why this is attractive. These gaps. That's why they're attractive. I mean, I love the humor. But it is that. It's like that present experience just kind of comes a little closer.
There's the felt sense, the geometry of a quality of intimacy or convergence that you feel yourself really as primacy, not secondhand. Because when we're living anecdotally, when we're living in mind, we're always secondhand.
We're always it's like we're out of phase.
Yes, mind and identification with mind is perpetually out of phase.
Out of focus. Do you ever see that movie?
But still, it's within phase or focus of what's present. How could it be really out of phase, right? It only feels, when we look at it this intimately, oh my God, my consciousness, my abstraction, my stories, my seeking for explanations or justifications, my hopes that my present experience will transmute into something more preferable feels like out of phase. Because we've fallen under the sway of the imagination of a durable, disparate, subjective nature. So the crux, if there's a crux, of all so-called samsara, as if there were any, is the confidence placed in this being of a durable, subjective nature. All other artifacts of suffering are the offspring of that. But you see, we get embroiled.
It's all relational.
We get embroiled in the symptoms. We want to medicate and ameliorate the symptoms of the primary genesis of mistaken identity. And we never satisfy the realization or freedom that we'd like, because all we're doing is moving furniture on the Titanic. We're only operating in symptoms.
And the amelioration never occurs.
It never occurs, or it does very temporarily.
It does temporarily, and then you end up in another situation and another problem. It's like whack-a-mole.
Yes, yes, that's right. The anecdotal hysteria is a lifelong game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah, I once saw that Suzaki Roshi guy. I asked him what was different about being enlightened. He said, oh, you just, after enlightened, you know, there's no difference. You don't care that you're, when you're not enlightened. Or something.
You don't
like
care
that
how stupid you are.
You don't care that it's, I can't even remember it now. But it was,
freedom from the myth of subjective nature has nothing to do with caring or not caring. Mm-hmm. There is no bridge.
I don't know what you mean, though. Dumb it down for me.
Everybody's free in a way.
This is non-personifiable. So there's no question of caring or not caring as a human that might be better off as a consequence of realization. All of this is myth. When you unravel from the present myth and mystery of subjective nature, where's the caring? Where's the not caring? It's not personifiable. There's no bridge. That's how free you are. There's no bridge. That's transhuman.
Anybody want any hot water?
It's curious for humans to hang out and discover new ways of communion that have nothing to do with stories about my or your personification. It's a very strange elevator to be on. Most of us, when we talk about the general population that doesn't want to go anywhere near meditation, become very, very unsettled to be with themselves primarily, or anybody else, free from the shackles of personification. Right? wouldn't it be strange were the entirety of phenomenal expression simply apparent for your indulgent enjoyment?
Yes, it's
in my
sweet.
Heart of hearts, I absolutely believe that.
So here in this phase of our adult life, our challenge is to put it to the test. You could say it took a number of years for us to become malevolently neurotic. Maybe it'll take a little time, as if there were any, to unwind from it.
At least to make it less malevolent.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it's like, okay, there's no time, but at the same time, I would find myself doing things and be like, I can't believe it's taking this long. It's like, it took me 33 years to get this fucking convoluted. Do you think it's, a 2 years?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, really?
Right. Yeah, give yourself a little wiggle room.
I'm like, you might need to sleep for 6 months. Who knows what 33 years of psychosis will do to somebody.
33 years is not.
I know. I'm saying, 1 year might have to sleep longer. I don't know. Maybe not.
If we look at the myth of realization as an accomplishment, as a takeaway, as something to occupy, right, a condition or a state to occupy, that's myth. And so much realization and spiritual acquisition and accumulation is sold that way. I spent $1,400 on the retreat. I drove quite a distance. I've been diligent with respect to silence, chewing slowly, and meditating on schedule. And I'm hoping that the consequence of my meritorious participation in this retreat will mean I'll get to go home with a little bit of inner peace that will last more than 2 hours.
Well, and also, most of the stuff we've read has indicated how hard this path has to be. You know, you have to almost kill yourself.
This has got your back. It'll kill you for you.
Yeah. Like the Eleusinian Mysteries, you'd have to fast for like 30 days and then walk 10 miles. You know, just put yourself through hell before this thing can happen.
A cup of decaf and a bear claw will do.
I remember Shinzen Young saying something about, oh, there's no fast track to enlightenment, except for there was this monastery in Thailand where they do this thing called Sun Lun meditation or something. He's like, oh, you sit for 2 years and you just go.
Oh my God.
So I had to go out and find out what it was and try it, and I couldn't do it. It was too hard.
Were you able to correspond with any successful enlighteners that did get through the 2 year process?
No, I found the monastery.
You were actually
going to
try that? I want to give you credit just for thinking about even going there. I bet.
But it does get you high, though. Let me tell you.
I'm sure. I mean, I've only done it for like maybe 20 minutes or half an hour most, and that was good. Yeah. I got pretty high.
Well, they recommended that you do it for like 2 hours a day, this breathing. I found the meditation of Jack Canfield book, Living Buddhist Masters, which is such a fun book, but. Because it's like reading about these magical people,
So if we were to Google lazy, low-budget enlightenment, would it get us tonight's conversation? You better make sure you got those keywords in there.
Yeah, I'll have to update the site.
We might need bigger tables here. If the word really gets out.
Yeah.
We're going to need more room.
Pretty low-budget. Free.
Yeah. I was going to go to the monastery, but then I got laid off from that job at the prison. Kevin's like, all right, whatever. Like, please, I don't get laid off. Please.
He didn't want you to go to the monastery?
Or to the maximum security prison.
Oh.
But yeah. I'm sure the dutiful husband would have visited you there, either in either case.
I would have written letters.
Well, let's correspond.
Would you have waited to continue on with those stabilizing sitcoms that you watch off of Netflix?
Yeah. Well, it was only a 2 week thing in Thailand. I was just going to go like a week or two.
In Thailand?
No, it was in Burma. It was in Burma.
Oh, Burma.
It does sound awesome.
I mean, it sounded nice. It was like an hour and a half in the morning, an hour and a half at night. And they had air conditioning. And it was cheaper than living at home.
And they had a sightsee all day.
And it was like pretty chill, I thought, for a monastery.
Well, it just shows how disinterested you are in enlightenment that you passed on the opportunity. You fucking poser.
Just got a picture of you in his next.
Here's another liar.
I will volunteer my picture. You can totally do a roast on me. It'd be great. Yeah. Right. Poser number five. You should do that. You should tear us all to bits on Facebook. I would love it.
It's only fair.
Poser number one.
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects.
Wanted by Homeland Security.
Do yourself first.
I've already
put that picture with the door J and a tinfoil hat up there.
Why would Homeland Security give two flying F's about? They might be listening.
Did you just see that helicopter go by? That was loud.
Drone.
Good thing we have this wood covering. It's like a boat. That's why we sit in the covering. Oh, God. So they can't see it.
Because it's recorded, and then they go online and figure out, like, people
do what. Well, she wanted to murder someone.
Are you taking anything seriously, Lisa?
I did.
That
I was
could
just
be an
referring
issue.
To
it was just a reference. It was no...
Now I have to edit another section.
It's about a movie.
Let's go back to you, Hefner, Robin Williams, anything, please. Billy Crystal, anything. Pamela Anderson, whatever you got.
Pamela.
All these movies.
So you can see how playful the myth of subjective nature is and the miraculous conjuring capacity of phenomenal expression as pranic excitation occurring within the beatitude of your first-hand experience. You are a professional imaginer.
What question?
What? Am I actual?
That's what she's having.
Yeah. I don't want to go
to
16 of the September.
What? I can't believe we expand ridiculously big to match
your. What expand ridiculously big?
My vocabulary.
Maybe you picked up a few new words.
But it gets thrown.
Corporeal. Mutagenic.
Occasionally I use words I don't know what they mean, and people are like, did that work? Not really. No.
When it comes to a stand-up routine...
Wait, there's a drone!
Here it comes. You two need to duck in a little. You're not in the covering.
When it comes to a stand-up routine, Robin Williams was quoted as saying, you know, in the business, you either killed or you died.
That's a good one.
Wow.
So true.
He also said he was, like, inhabited. He didn't even remember anything half the time. I thought that was pretty, like, that's like awake in a way, you know. Yeah, he was channeling.
That's what it seems like, huh? The stuff that is really the wisdom that comes through, you can never remember it.
No. So it just spontaneously shows up, however the fuck it shows up. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what the hell just happened.
Yeah. It's like channeling Seth.
What was that thing?
What was that whole Seth thing?
Jane, I like this book.
Oh, boy.
The nature of reality.
It always seems kind of spooky. I never
Why don't you channel him right now?
That was one of my first. I like it.
Yeah. But then I just started reading about it, and I thought, I didn't realize it. I thought it was some horror thing, but it was nothing like that.
Well, that's the Course in Miracles.
It takes Jesus to do it right.
Did anybody ever read Gary Renard's book?
I did.
That was kind of like channeling gossip, though, wasn't it?
I love that book. You should see it. I still have it at home. I got a million and one sticky notes sticking out all over this
book.
Were
they like asking about the Shroud of Turin? He's like, oh, that's real. Like, really? It's that specific? Like,
Is he channeling?
He's talking to Arden and Persa.
Yeah.
He was in his living room, and he'd been, like, you know, hanging out for a while. He was in his living room, and pop, Arden and Persa showed up. And they start chatting with him about A Course in Miracles. So it's this whole dialogue with Arden and Persa.
But some of them are just, like, funny questions. Like, so was Mary Magdalene really a prostitute or not? You know, like,
oh,
God. They didn't really say that, but...
Who's Persa and Arden? They were these beings that just magically appeared in his living room for these
dialogues.
That's
what their names were.
Arden and Persa.
Yep.
How do people have these experiences? Because, you know, I've never had...
Neither have
I. Although I probably have a heart attack and die right on the spot, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's why I got
this book.
Well, you're having this one.
And you know what?
You're always channeling someone. It
if
looks
I
like
said
Lisa,
I was channeling
not.
Something and Arden and Persa showed up, you knew where I'd end up. In the mental hospital, I'd be worse down the street.
Yeah, great.
Well,
she has a history.
Could make $1 million in a book at it. Right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some people that have ended up in mental hospitals who actually... Or maybe.
Anyway. We're in one now. It just feels like a large cruise ship.
With an uncontrollable laughing fit.
Well, Joan of Arc got burned at the stake. And
you're right on track.
How do you know? Like, how
it could be a mental hospital.
I'll borrow your card.
We're Jupiter's mental hospital. You know?
I mean, what about Art and Persa? Maybe they were liars.
Who's a liar?
The whole planet is Australia.
The whole planet's Australia.
Yeah.
The bad strain.
It does. It's the mental and penal colony for...
I know. Why would we think that anybody that could, if there were some other side they could come through, wouldn't be psychopaths? Couldn't be psychopaths. Like, if they're showing up, then they must be valid.
They must hold the truth.
What?
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Captain.
Peace and love.
Peace and love. For the record. Peace and love.
Just for the record.
Mac and beans.
Everyone.
So your own attentivity is one's attentivity is very, very slippery. Very puppy-like.
The bird, you could rewind the sleep.
Look how the birds flutter around.
It's very fluttering and flittering about. See, we get nervous if it's encouraged, let's say, to take hold of oneself, where yoga can be referred to as a yoke, but not a yoke that imprisons, but yoked to, call it sobriety, right? Yoked to mindfulness. And we're not so sure. We want to go through that membrane. We may be entrained or entertained from time to time by the notion or promise of liberation or the remarkable stories of liberated personas. We may go on a retreat to hang out with a local liberated persona and see what they might have to say.
It's like taking a celebrity cruise.
It absolutely is like taking a celebrity cruise. Yeah. Oh, what I wouldn't give for Neil Donald Walsh, Wayne Dyer, and Carolyn Meese on the same boat.
Sure it's happened.
What's that?
Probably happened.
They might not be so bad, but some of the people that came along on that boat,
Yeah.
You'd want to kill him and throw him overboard.
I'd try to throw myself overboard.
That's why they raise the rails on those cruises.
They also have nets on the side of some of them.
Yeah.
Disney ones.
Oh, and of course, of course, Michael Beckwith to round it out. Yeah. The master of good times. Positive thinking.
What's that about?
They probably have good music there at the center.
Oh, no question. Yeah. They do. Oh, yeah.
Sunday morning.
In this way, you can witness the nature of your own playful, remarkable restlessness. That's, you know, it's not a Debbie Downer.
So it's not buying a watch if you're restless, but if you're restless.
It's up to you.
Isn't it usually that restlessness, though, that entices you to buy the watch? Like, you're sitting, things are open, and it's, oh, well, I really think I need a cup of coffee, or I'd be more comfortable if I had a cup of coffee. Like, it's that rub with just what's right here that always just takes you out in small ways and big ways. Ruminating about what you want,
Well, we're self-entertaining and optimizing within the body of a fantasy. We don't want anyone coming around, including ourselves, to suggest that we snap out of it. We can be very defensive about our bone. Between our teeth, which is my right and privilege to live fancifully in imagination.
All you have to do, like in these circles, there's an openness to take a look. In other circles, I mean, just the whisper of a challenge to their belief system, and they are all over you like flies on shit. I mean, there's some people that are just so tight with what they hold to be true. Like, there's no, well, is it possible that that isn't the case? Oh, no.
Yeah, and we can see that same kind of defensive hysteria in ourselves, the consequence of so much superstition.
The defensive hysteria, I think, is directly related to our inability to just set it down and not buy the next watch. That's what drives us to buy the next watch.
It's not causal. They're all peer-based revelation. Yeah, nothing's causal. They're all symptomatic of the same thing.
Sometimes it feels like a spaghetti bowl. All the noodles are like
yes,
tight, and then I pull on one noodle, and for me, I pull on the noodle by a question. Is it true? I take it to the work. When I pull on that one noodle, sort of like the whole wad starts to loosen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because what appears as your experience in the imagination of time looks like maybe something wadded up that can be unraveled. Because this doesn't quit. Right? This doesn't quit. It's urgent. It's pushy. You know, radiance is not passive. That's why experience feels like it's of the nature of an unfolding or a streaming or occurring in time, psychologically or otherwise.
Or shut up, I just want to sleep, and it won't shut up.
All kinds of symptoms arise, right, within the intimate field of you. And they are imaginary. Because you can't actually define yourself in this moment as the consequence of anything that you can recall from prior to this moment. That's a little bit startling. can't actually define yourself in this moment of prescient awareness by anything that may have occurred prior to this moment. You are perfectly refreshed.
However, don't you think it kind of builds on itself?
What does?
I don't know.
I'm not
like
sure then how to reply.
Because then it's like constant relating back.
Remember when Peter was saying something about like levels of maturity, and I took it to mean like maturity with big M. Like, I tried to define it by saying evolving.
Yes.
That's like living.
Right.
But because you're not really evolving, you're like more mature. In other words,
you needn't create the myth of time for yourself here. And yes, of course, as you scan what you imagine is your life, you can find some evidence of maturing, changing interests, some refinement, some subtlety, maybe some relief from suffering. Right? You can find these things if you go in search of them. You can conjure them.
All right. They're not true either.
No, they're not true. Yeah. So maturing, evolvement, spiritually or otherwise, is perfectly clear. I mean, I'm not still an infant, although just physically speaking. Emotionally, I'm still an infant. You know. And so it looks like some maturing has occurred here. But it's not true. Isn't it a little...
You can revel in being an immature, ridiculous infant.
You can revel in it all.
Great. Who
cares? Nothing is standing in the way of your reverie.
Or revelment.
Or revelment. Or revilement. Depending on the day. See that it's not necessary to imagine yourself as a being in time. Experiment with feeling yourself completely outside of the myth of time. Now, if your awareness is lit in your frontal brain, in your neocortex, you're going to be under the influence of, you know, profound reference making. Yes? That's how reference making occurs. It's, you could say, chronically, magically stimulated. Now, where else might you rest in your present experience? Whether corporeally or extracorporeally, so as not to be under the influence, the inebriation of referencing, of the imagination of psychological time. And here we are. Here it is. You don't really have to struggle with it.
It's kind of funny, though, because it's like the thoughts and the mind keep touching base on, you know, like physical sensations. Oh, you know, that's due to what happened just before. Or, oh, I think I'm going to have this for
breakfast tomorrow.
Sure.
Oh, well, maybe I don't need to stop at the grocery store because I already have it. It's like it's always touching. It's like always going out and touching base on the future.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
like
a bat flying, and it's got to just constantly keep pinging with the radar so that it knows where it's going and
pinging.
It's safe.
Right?
Constant pinging.
Yes, consciousness is engaged in constant pinging, right? Addressing, TCIP, TCPIP, addressing, HTTP, right? HTTPS, if it's private, right? Yeah. Yeah, so you're pinging. Right. So as a see your present experience as a subtle communication system, right? A neural net that's pinging.
But the pinging doesn't necessarily have to mean that there really is a future and past.
Pinging.
You watch the pinging, but that's part of this.
Pinging does not actually convey anything.
Yeah,
it does
pinging.
Not convey reality.
It's just pinging.
It only confers dreaming.
Yeah, it's part of the dream.
There you go. Yeah, right.
Bigger circle. Let's think of that circle.
Right. So you're the atmosphere of your presence sees the nature of pinging as not actually conveying any reality, though it can be called upon faster than fast to select the grocery items that may or may not be necessary for tomorrow's breakfast. It is astonishing.
And when you get home, you find, oh yeah, that was right.
If you look at the communication systems that primates have developed in a relatively very, very short period of geologic time, the material communication systems and the devices that are used, right, to enable the global net, the global neural net, are reflective of what's going on, at least from science's point of view, with respect to synaptic potential.
Wow.
Doesn't as above, so below make sense?
Wow.
Yes?
That's pretty cool.
Isn't it? I mean, instinctively, you can say, wow, the scientists have revealed what happens, right, at the microcurrent level of synaptic activity embroiled in an incredible, highly sensitive, fatty tissue environment. And within a square millimeter of synaptic tissue, the connections are uncanny. And so the extroverted neural net that the species has concocted, wired and wirelessly, is the same nature. Yes? So why shouldn't the pinging, which is dreaming, be able to harness its own inherent intelligence through the neocortex, through impressionable systems, and the opposable thumb, to replicate itself as an externality? And whether it's synaptic or whether it's global communication systems, it's the same dream. It's the same dream. Fair enough. Why is my zipper open?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Why am I asking you?
She didn't charge us that, right?
That at all.
Jeff that too.
To make Homeland Security think there's no threat here.
I don't know if you would get out of the house without Beth. Is that what that was about? Basically, Beth, do I have clothes on?
Yeah. Is this guy a threat or not? I don't think so, no. He walks around with his zipper being down and then comments on it on a tape recording. No threat here, Sergeant.
There's another department for that, though. So you gotta
watch out for that department. Yeah.
The penal department.
Yeah.
I'm filling in for Dave.
So as you peer into the remarkable intelligence that you are, with the gift of the remarkable intelligence that you are, you're untethered from the imagination of a boundary field. You become released from the myth of possessing a durable subjective nature. You're released from selfing.
Are you giggling at that one?
Now, my preference, rather than to speak humorously and extemporaneously about selfing, which our dear Paul Hederman does as well as Robin Williams does what he does, did. Rather than that, I'd rather tune our attention to the miraculous quality of availability and observation and discovery. Rather than to illustrate selfing and then say to you, you're not that. Though, of course, that's a, you know, lovely path as well. I think it dead ends after a while. That there's a useful consequence of the illustration of selfing, and then the encouragement, the exhortation that you're not that. It seems more fun for my, you know, useless persona to kind of focus on other qualities of insight that are available to you as you presently, rather than get distracted by, you're right, the curious nature of selfing. Who cares?
But that's what you mean, that's what you're talking about when it's wanna buy away. That is another word for wanna buy away.
That metaphor is, yes, an observation of the genesis of selfing. Yeah.
I thought that meant you go blind, but
they're back. It's too strange for us to fathom that this is not about anything.
Well, life's been set up to make it about something.
Our agony, our existential angst, is the conflict between an insistence, dogged insistence, to make this about something when it's not. The urgency for explanation, for justification, for selfing or presenting oneself or impersonating oneself. Insisting on relevance, destination, durability, security, is hysteria. We really want it to work out, and it won't obey. And we're pissed.
But sometimes it seems to be obeying, sometimes it doesn't, and you start to get pretty desperate because you really get a sense that it's not possible.
Desperate's good. It's a sign of going to failure. Systems failure. We don't know what to do with ourselves if I'm not relying upon the next thought, the next story, the next justification.
Or if we just no longer believe it's going to get us something. If you highly suspect, if you start to really suspect and then you start to sink into non-causality, nothing means anything. Nothing. And there's a... there's a depression to it until you just realize it still just keeps kind of going. And it sort of still seems
there might be other vectors available to you than a depression and then a recalcitrance with that depression.
It's like I toyed with that, and that's just so not where I stay. It's never been where I stay. But it is like the value and the juice and the belief in all this stuff is not what it used to be.
Yes.
Really not what it used to be.
Really, really. Yeah.
The belief that any of this negotiation is going to get me anywhere.
Right.
Whether it's meetings, whether it's healthy diet, whether it's whatever.
Right.
Marriage counselor.
Okay. So let's say... let's say that's a present observation. Then, here. See, because it's not enough for us to even have the lucidity of that observation. Because again, it's consequential, it's behavioral. It places you once again in the equation as a durable subjective nature. Bless you, bless you.
It's just over and over and over this. You can't manipulate it, you can't negotiate with it. And tomorrow it'll be that.
It's very weird just to drop completely out of any frame of reference. There's no more explanation. Because everything that you or one might report on as being consequential to their life is a presently conjured fantasy. What else could freedom look like or feel like if not the cessation of any identification with anything? Otherwise, freedom would be conditional.
That's what they mean by the door's open. There's no lock. There's no guard. It's open. It's right here.
This is it.
It's only our belief that creates the closed door.
Yes.
And causality.
Yes. And belief is another metaphor for inhabiting or presuming that you're of a durable subjective nature. They're the same. Belief, superstition, flights of fancy. It's intense. I mean, the entirety of our persona, the value of our so-called life on Earth, is based on fanciful thinking, magical thinking. Inconvenient heresy.
Yeah.
So you have to be nudged along, not by anyone other than yourself, right? This is a self-nudging revelation. Because your experience is sovereign. Maybe in the conversations that we have, we're just taking the risk to elucidate profound instincts that we already have that we just don't have a vocabulary for. Or that the social structure doesn't encourage us to articulate. Because the social structure wants you to remain stupid, obedient, and consumptive. That's what the elementary school and the secondary school, the high school, and the collegiate experience and the employment experience teach you. Stupid, obedient, and consumptive. And therefore we don't have within the culture opportunities to articulate our most profound instincts for unequivocal liberation. And so we're bereft. We're heartbroken and grief-stricken, and we don't even know it. So all of the activity in our life is compensatory and insufficient to the task of regaining your dignity and waking up. You can do this. You can. You're a magical being. Your attention is marvelous.
So we'll put on our Nikes and
do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Put your Nikes and put your feet up.
This is not a lightning bolt
stare at them.
Thing.
No lightning bolts.
They come. They do. But here it is. Here's the lightning bolt that you've been waiting for. Here's the close encounter of a third kind that you've been secretly hoping to have.
Turns out to be yourself
right about here, right about now, nonstop. Yeah. So we're shifting confidence from distracted, hallucinating seeker fucker to perfect confidence. Implacable. What's that, right?
I know the word. I've never actually used it myself.
Try it. See what it means. I don't know.
Implacable. You can't put it on a plaque on the wall.
That's right.
You can't take there a picture of it.
Yeah, the way I'm feeling it is, you know, you have implacable confidence. Yeah. Means you cannot be swayed from, right? The revelation of yourself. I may be wrong, but that's how I was, you know, intending the word to be used. We'll see.
It's like when I can't spell something, I just go to the next word. Maybe I can spell that.
Yeah.
It's a very small vocabulary I can actually spell.
Make shit up.
Unable to be placated.
Unable to be placated. Right. Implacable.
Relentless. Unstoppable.
Oh. I nailed it.
Very good. Inspired and vocabulary.
Opposed to someone or something in a very angry or determined way that cannot be changed.
You should go in Jeopardy when they have a vocabulary box.
I'll fail.
Jeff would be awesome. Jeopardy. You'd be awesome.
Jeopardy. Yeah, Ken and I already decided we're going to call you if we get the cash cap.
I don't know you.
Cash cap. Call Jeff. Yeah. He'll be like, I don't know, but I can give you a clever word.
How do you spell ASAP?
How does an artist paint miraculous, meticulous, evocative imagery in incredible proportion and dimensionality? They don't know.
Yeah, like Michelangelo's.
Yeah.
It would speak to him, right? He would,
you know, yeah. Because it's a timely subject and, you know, people are watching Robin Williams' YouTubes all over the place. How was it possible for him to free associate with that kind of fractal integrity? He didn't know. When they asked Einstein about E equals MC squared, he didn't know.
And yet we can walk around as supposedly normal people berating ourselves for not being enough for something to
win. We're pretty good
at
it.
Being an Einstein, not that it's like...
Yeah, yeah.
That's as silly as thinking that Einstein was responsible for what he did.
No, yeah. If I speak in the absolutely bizarre way that I do, it's an imagery. It's like feeling first, and then just kind of waiting around, right, for a certain vibration to appear that looks like words strung together in a way that might have a rat's ass chance in hell of making sense. But were all of this nature of spontaneous image making and image reflecting intelligence? It just, right, comes out in kind of different ways. For each, everyone's magical, it's just a different kind of iteration of the same magical exposition of the nature of consciousness.
You like the way Francine eats her food, right?
What?
The way you eat your food, you have like a certain, like that's a quality.
This is magical.